Marcus.
Big Sean.
What is up, man? How's your trade going?
Trade's going the same. You surprised me. You just hit the record button.
It's getting late where you are, so I want to make sure you get to bed at a good hour. And is Bitcoin digital or is it physical? we were having a little argument. It wasn't an argument. It was a good discussion.
And that's obviously digital. What's your take?
Oh, come on. I said it's digital. You see physical. You know what? Honestly, every time that we have a disagreement, you always end up being right. So I'm just going to take your word for it. That's what I'm going to do.
I'd argue with you, but yeah, we already know that I'm going to be right anyway.
Yeah, I don't know. You're just wiser. You're a little bit older than me, a little bit wiser. And
no, dude, I hate, like, I would never say I'm always right because.
No, yeah. I know. We're just having good banta. Good banta.
Good banta, mate.
Okay. Well, to everyone who is new, welcome in. This is episode 18 of Bitcoiners Guide, the show that we wish we would have had when we first started learning about Bitcoin. So we made it for you. We're your hosts, Big Sean Harris and Plan Marcus. Today is Monday, June 20th. It's 4:31 p.m. here in Mountain Standard Time. And the current price of Bitcoin is $20,000 and some change. It's been doing a lot of ups and downs in the last 24 hours. So we're not even going to talk about what it is up or down. It is where it is. Sats per dollar is almost 5,000. Loving that. Loving how cheap it is to buy some Bitcoin. So last week we talked about how Bitcoin is the buying opportunity of a lifetime. Then it dipped some more. And we're in even a better buying position. There's been some things that have happened. Before we get into it, Marcus and I were talking about Bitcoin and we were talking about reserve assets. And so we wanted to have the Bitcoiner's Guide tip of the week brought to you by mfmerch.com, the best merch in Bitcoin.
Swag.
Your swag, buy your merch, or don't buy it, right? You don't have to buy it. It's just cool stuff. So here I am. I'm going to share my screen right now. And this is just an investopedia. So take it for what it is. Maybe it's awesome. Maybe it sucks. You'll be able to decide that. So to understand what is a reserve asset, because Marcus was asking, and then it got me thinking too, can Bitcoin be a reserve asset? Well, what's the definition of reserve asset? Reserve assets are financial assets denominated in foreign currencies and held by central banks that are primarily used to balance payments. Key takeaways. Reserve assets are currencies or other assets such as gold that can be readily transferable and are used to balance international transactions and payments. A reserve asset must be readily available, physical. This is where we got on the debate, is Bitcoin physical or not? Controlled by policymakers and easily transferable. And then it goes on to say the US dollar is a reserve currency, meaning it is widely held as a reserve asset around the world. But what's interesting, because it says it has to be physical, but you think about the dollar being the world reserve currency. And then when we put the sanctions on Russia, all of a sudden Russia didn't have access to its US dollar or US dollar denominated reserves. So it goes to show that even US reserves aren't physical, because if they were physical and they were holding them, then the US wouldn't be able to sanction those reserves from the Russians. Or maybe I'm wrong, or maybe they just wrote down all the serial numbers from the dollars that they sent to Russia. I don't know. What do you think, Marcus?
I'm really wondering, like, who makes these definitions, right? Is it like a bunch of Keynesians sitting together in like some ivory tower somewhere deciding, let's add it needs to be physical, right? I don't know. I haven't studied economics, so it's a question that I wonder, and shouldn't it be updated now that we've the discovery of digital assets since Bitcoin's inception?
Yes, I
think. So are we just looking, but that's one part of it. So, you know, this definition that we're looking at, is probably from like legacy world.
Yes.
So probably need some updating, but just in general, right? Even like, forget what like the definition on Wikipedia or Investopedia or whatever it says, right? It's like, if I think about like a reserve asset, I think about, for some reason, I have to think about a barn and you're living like, off grid or whatever, and you just want to have some safe stuff, whether it's gold. I see gold as a reserve asset, right? It could be even be like a stockpile of wood or a stockpile of like oil, maybe, right? It's like, yeah, it's just an asset, it'll always maintain some value. There's always going to be buyers for it. That's what I would have expected from like a definition of something you can hold as a reserve that you can just, and preferably like, that is just not hedged, or that's not linked to like the current money, right? Because if you get like a downturn in stocks and money, you want to have some asset, hidden away, tucked away for later as a savings, like a reserve asset. That's what I think of. Yes. And then I think it's like Bitcoin seems like the perfect reserve asset to me. It meets a lot of the definitions. Okay, it's not physical, but in a sense it is, right? Because you can actually store your Bitcoin physically on a hardware wallet or on a piece of paper or even in your head. So it can actually take on both forms, And it's really, truly a bearer asset. So whoever holds those 24 words,
yep,
really holds, so you can argue about whether it's digital or physical, but I think they're both. So that's where the discussion came.
Yeah. Yeah, I would tend to agree. I think Bitcoin is more digital, obviously, than it is physical. There are no, so anyone who's new to this thing, there are no little Bitcoins that look like little gold coins that are going around. So don't go buying those if someone's trying to sell you that. But you can store your keys physically. And in reality, that is, like, you don't own a Bitcoin or Bitcoins. Like, you don't own those. You have access to the keys of the UTXO set or the UTXOs. So that's a little technical to start out with.
What's a UTXO, Sean?
It's an unspent transaction output. What does that mean? That just basically means you buy Bitcoin, you have it in your wallet or in your address. The unspent transaction outputs that are in there, all of those that you've bought, they comprise your total stack. And that's what you have. That's your Bitcoin. So it's kind of interesting. It's if you want to study up on it, just Google it. It's pretty easy stuff.
Good call.
Yeah. If you look a little bit further, so this is what's pretty funny about Investopedia. And I guess, when I think of Investopedia, I think of like all your current economists, and then I see all my economists, my Keynesians, and then I see Michael Saylor, and he's just saying to all of them, your models are broken, and Bitcoin, in my mind, is rewriting the history books. It's rewriting all of these books and everything and all these models that have been put out in the past, including what is a reserve currency, because it's something new. How does it fit? You can't put Bitcoin in a box. And I think that's what all these people try to do, is they look at it and they go, well, the closest thing that it looks like to me is a stock. And then they go, well, there's no cash flow. There's no earnings. There's nothing. So it's a fraud. And then they go, there's no way it can be money because it's too volatile to be money, right? That's like the easy cop outs that economists have. And so it's funny here, if you go, okay, well, historically reserve assets as per the International Monetary Fund or the IMF, which we don't care too much for the IMF, the balance of payments manual must at a minimum comprise the following financial assets: gold, foreign currencies. Bitcoin may constitute as a foreign currency. It's a neutral currency and it's not by any state, so it's technically a foreign currency. The currencies must be tradable, can buy or sell anywhere, such as USD or Euro. That fits the definition of Bitcoin. Special drawing rights, those are SDRs.
This is so funny, right? Because the SDR is literally just like paper money.
Yes, like paper money to a T.
Just like made up funny money. You know, it's just like,
yeah.
Google it. It's crazy. Yeah.
Yep. Represent rights to obtain foreign exchange or other reserve assets from other IMF members. So that's proof of stake on steroids. Whoever decides that, oh, we have the money, great. Now you have those SDRs. You have the special drawing rights. You're special. And then a reserve position with the IMF. Reserves the country has given to the IMF that are readily available to the member country. Okay. So conclusion for the Bitcoiner's Guide Tip of the Week. Can Bitcoin be the world reserve asset? Marcus, do you think that that is something that Bitcoin can do?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I really like your point about Bitcoin rewriting history. I think that is spot on and probably like underrated tweet right there. It's already happened, right? Like we literally have rewritten history already and we're just getting started.
Yes.
And to answer your second question, yeah, definitely. I completely can see, but obviously, man, I mean, we're here at the Bitcoiner's Guide, but yeah, it's like you said, it's a win all take all money, and the game theory kind of like dictates that ultimately Bitcoin being the most scarce and hardest, unfuckable, unchangeable money, making it the hardest, scarcest thing, which we're going to measure everything against. There is no better tool. There's no better measurement stick to do that with. And because it's so tight and so fixed in its being, yeah, it makes it a perfect tool. It makes it a perfect reserve asset. It makes sense to price everything in Bitcoin. It'll make for better calculation, better economic calculation through time. There won't be any inflation. Well, there will be some inflation, but it'll be perfectly known. You know, we know it through the halvings and the block rewards that have been laid out since the first block. So
yes.
Yeah, definitely. I can definitely see it being a reserve. And it's going to get there slowly. In a sense, it's already a reserve asset because, you know, El Salvador has put it, you know, they're using it as a reserve asset, literally. It's a sovereign state that's been buying Bitcoin. I don't know exactly how they're custodying it, but they are custodying it physically, Sean. And it's kind of like Nouriel Roubini saying Bitcoin is not a currency. Yeah, until it is, right? Until it literally became a currency. And he's still saying no, it's not a currency. So Investopedia, which is clearly underwriting the IMF definition, so you know, they're gonna deny it's a reserve currency, and they'll be like that. They'll deny it until they just can't deny it anymore. But then it'll be too late.
Yeah, it makes me think of, I saw this tweet from some macro dude, and he had a chart of Bitcoin and a chart of avocados for like the last 2 years. And apparently avocados have gone up faster. Well, not up faster, but have steadily, not because of Bitcoin's quote unquote crash to 20,000, which 2 years ago, Bitcoin at 20,000 would have looked amazing. And it did look amazing when we got to 20,000 a year and a half ago. But the run up that Bitcoin has had from 2 years ago and avocados have had a bigger run up, not when Bitcoin is at 69K, but now that it's down at 20,000. And so then he goes, Bitcoin's not an inflation hedge. Avocados are an inflation hedge. And I think it's just, I think these economists, and he's just, you know, he's just poking fun. Obviously, he doesn't believe in Bitcoin, or he doesn't understand it. But at the same time, he's making a joke that he thinks is funny. Like, he thinks this is a witty joke. And to Bitcoiners, it's like, it's a tale as old as time. You know, I think even Rubini said that olives were a better inflation hedge. I think there's some bank in Italy that uses cheese. I think they have cheese reserves that they keep refrigerated. Oh, yeah.
In Canada, they have maple syrup reserves.
Yes, exactly.
It's a real thing to have a vault with like maple syrup.
Yeah. And so you just like look at these economists and they try to box Bitcoin in. And this is the biggest issue, is that you can't box Bitcoin in. All your models are broken. Bitcoin is rewriting the history books. You can't box it into being an inflation hedge. Like, that's not what it is. And yes, there's a 21 million cap, but it's much more than an inflation hedge. You can't box it into being blockchain technology, because every crypto and its mom out there has blockchain technology. So you can't box it into that. You can't box it into being a stock. You can't, like, it's just, it's a new money. And Lynn Alden tweeted this out. She said, if Bitcoin doesn't fail, which she, in her tweets, it seems like she believes that it won't, because it hasn't and it continues to move forward. If Bitcoin doesn't fail and continues to maintain key crypto market share, then watch out. Money is a zero-sum contest. Only the deepest, most liquid, most fungible, most portable, most uncensorable, and most resistant to debasement survive. Bitcoin is leading there. So when you talk about Bitcoin being this new money, it's not created to just be like the fastest Visa payment thing out there, which it will do with the Lightning Network, but it's meant to survive as the base layer. So it's supposed to be this granite rock foundation. And that's what a lot of people miss when they're thinking about what Bitcoin is. It's supposed to be a foundation so strong that even a nuclear fallout doesn't break it. And a nuclear fallout wouldn't stop Bitcoin. And then if you go, okay, then if you move backwards, then if it can do that, then it's the hardest money, it's the best money, and it's a zero-sum contest, as Lynn Alden says, which means all money, it trends to one, and people will end up using the best money out there.
Yeah, and we'll see, right? So Bitcoin is only like, since 2009, so it's like 13 years old. I mean, it's, in some sense, it's still an experiment, you know? Nobody really knows what's going to happen. I mean, what is the, like, before Bitcoin, I guess the US dollar, wasn't that like a zero-sum game as well? So why didn't like the whole world just like switch to the dollar completely?
Yeah, that's a good point. What do you think?
I just like to take the counter argument now.
Yes, yeah, that is a really good point. I would say, because governments have power over money currently, but in a Bitcoinized world, then there'll be separation of money and state. So then I think that's when you really see governments switching to, well, everyone switching to Bitcoin. Like when gold was around, different societies or civilizations used gold and they didn't even know that they didn't even know each other, and they were still using gold as their money. Because it tends to one, son.
Yeah, gold is still around. Why isn't gold like the number one money?
Because gold always
gold's price is manipulated. I always hear, but you know, it's like, yeah, how is it being manipulated? I can't explain it. What I do know, of course, is like there's a lot more gold in the ground left, you know. So maybe,
yeah, Uganda.
I mean, it's been a pretty damn neat trick how they got people like to hand in their gold money, you know, and just swap it around for like worthless pieces of paper, basically. And we all trust that paper is backed by some value somewhere in a vault of a bank, which we all know hasn't been the case like since what 1971 in the United States.
Yeah.
So what kind of world are we living in? Maybe money doesn't require, like a real asset behind it, or it makes you think of the Yap stones, where like people just knew it was like a public ledger, right? All these big stones in the middle of the village, everybody knew whose stone belonged to whom, and
yeah.
It's such a weird construct.
It is weird because we're used to having money that it needs to be backed by something. But then you go, okay, well, what was gold backed by? Right? What was gold backed by? It was backed by the monetary properties of gold, of it being scarce, of it being fungible, portable, somewhat portable, right? Resistant to debasement.
It was scarce and made it hard to obtain.
Yeah.
I guess it was that also made it desirable, because not everybody could have it. And it had some shiny features, if you think back on like the olden days, they would decorate buildings in such a way.
Yeah, exactly. And so then you go, okay, well, Bitcoin, people go, well, what's Bitcoin backed by? It's not backed by, you could say it's backed by code, it's backed by math, it's backed by the miners, but in reality, it's the bare asset. Bitcoin is the bare asset. So it's backed by nothing. It doesn't need to be backed by something. It's not fiat currency. It's sound hard currency. It doesn't need to have a backing. It's backed, it's money, what it's backed by is the sound properties of money that it exhibits.
It's verifiability. You don't need to trust. It's completely verifiable. Anybody can run their own node, look at the blockchain, see all the transactions since the beginning, confirm that there's like no more than 21 million Bitcoin, that it's, and that nobody can cheat it. And then if the money is good, there's this fixed amount that, that everybody's playing according to the rules of the protocol. I guess that's what's backing it in your argument here.
Exactly, because when you talk about fiat being backed by gold, all that it meant was if I take this note, this dollar note, and I take it to the bank, I can exchange that note for gold, for a fixed amount of gold. And that's why it's backed by gold, because there's a fixed amount, there's a fixed exchange rate that I'll get for something real. But if you had gold, then you wouldn't need to have your gold backed by anything, because it is the reserve asset. It is the thing that everything else is trying to peg itself to, which we've learned over time. No currency can ever be pegged to another currency. We learned that with Luna a couple weeks ago. We learned that in 2015 when Switzerland tried to peg itself to the euro, and then it just said, screw this, we're out. And then the euro dropped like 20-30% overnight. We learned that in 1971 when the dollar was unpegged from gold. You just can't peg one currency to another. It does not work. It won't work. In the long run, the depegging will always come around.
imagine this, Sean. Imagine there's somebody that has like a printing machine and can make the perfect US dollars. They can print like $100 bills, like, perfectly. There's no way to, I know they got serial codes and whatnot, but just as a thought experiment, right? So
yeah.
So now these bills are like perfectly, you can't see the difference. How much would that counterfeiter be able to print without like consequence?
Are we talking just some random, like me, if I had one?
So if you had a printer, right, you could probably print up like $1 million, spend it, and nobody would ever know. It wouldn't cause inflation, right? What happens if you had like such a big production that you can print like 40% of all the US dollars in circulation? Well, like, at what point will people notice, like, hey, wait a minute, there's like a lot of money in circulation?
Probably when I start buying all these fancy citadels.
Yeah. Buying so there's more to it, right? Yeah.
Someone will notice.
Point being, right, is like,
what would I just buy up all Bitcoin?
If people knew that there were like a couple of people around the world that were just like debasing that they have this money printer, you know, and they can't really do anything about it because this printer is so good, it looks exactly the same. Of course, you know, the US would probably change their dollar, you know, their dollar bills, recall all the old ones and like make new ones again. But the idea is it would cause unrest, right? People would start losing trust in the dollar because they're like, hey, this could be a counterfeit dollar. We don't know anymore.
Yeah.
If the government printed 40% out of nowhere, then we all are like, okay, this is fine. Yeah, it's no problem.
The dog in the burning room. This is fine.
Yeah.
That meme. Yeah. If you or me did it, people would say this isn't fair. But if the government does it, then it's good monetary policy. That's what people think.
Speaking of monetary policy, what did the Fed do this week? We had a Fed meeting. I know you love watching that stuff.
I did watch it. The Fed came out, they raised the federal funds rate 75 basis points, which is 0.75%. It's in a gap. It's in a range now of 1.5 to 1.75. 1.5, 1.7, or 1.25 to 1.5. Either way, they raised it 75 basis points. And the reason why they're doing this is because they're trying to look serious. They want to get respect. A lot of people have lost respect of the central bank of the United States because of current inflation levels. So they're trying to gain back respect, trying to gain back the narrative. According to Jerome Powell, it seems like their number one thing that they're trying to do is to get inflation down. And that there seems like, to me at least, that the Fed is willing to risk high unemployment or losses of jobs and a recession or a depression to get inflation under control. That's the stance that they're taking currently. I don't think that stance will last forever. I think that they'll end up choosing to debase the currency. But right now, they're barking loud and saying, we're willing to go through high unemployment. We're willing to go through a recession or a depression if we can raise rates and get inflation under control. The problem is, I don't think raising rates is going to get inflation under control. And so when they see that, they're going to say, well, what are we doing this for? Let's lower the interest rate, let's print more money because it doesn't even matter. And then we're going to really see inflation go through the roof. And you're going to, it's going to be a wild ride. I think this decade is going to be a wild ride of inflation. I think you should stock up on your Bitcoin and you should stock up on food supplies as well. Because when there's high inflation, there's going to be shortages everywhere. So, and maybe even stock up on some ammunition if you're in the US. What did you get out of it? They also talked about the CBDC, which kind of like we were talking about earlier with reserve assets. What were your thoughts on the CBDC talk that they had?
I just thought it was just such a, you know, it's always like little baby steps, right? And it's like little moves every time. But it's, to me, it's like such a milestone again to hear like the Federal Reserve now saying that they're going to look into CBDCs, right? I mean, they didn't say they were actually going to make one, but, you know, they've been talking about it a little bit before. But now here you have, you know, Jerome Powell, head of the Federal Reserve, saying, yeah. And I wish we had, maybe we can edit it in here, but we had that little clip from Jerome Powell where he actually makes those statements.
Okay.
Because there's some line in there where he says something to the tune of, to see if we can improve upon an already efficiently and perfectly working dollar system. Basically, you know? like the whole, it's just, to me, it's so funny because like 4 years ago, or maybe 5 years ago, they wouldn't you know, they literally just ignored us, you know. Then they laughed at us. And now they're like, you know, they're saying, seeing the growth of the cryptocurrency space is like, yeah, see, we told you so. You know, in a couple of years, we're going to be too big to deny. You know, you cannot. Bitcoin forces them to have to look at this thing. They want to look away. They want to dismiss it, but Bitcoin doesn't care. You know, and the adoption has been growing massively. There's been a massive wave of new users. Fortunately, a lot of people get burnt, and that's the way people learn about crypto and about Bitcoin. And you know, but it's getting so big, and they're really worried. And now they're even forced into looking at a central bank digital currency, which wouldn't even exist without Bitcoin, right? Because the idea behind it is like, what we should look at Investopedia. What is a CBDC, right? Because it's probably something blockchain something.
Yes,
but it's just a database. It's nothing different from the current system, except that, yeah, what is the difference, right? What, it just doesn't make sense. It's like a solution looking, or like, what is it? Like a solution looking for a problem. It's a joke. So it's kind of really fun to watch as they're now going to make a CBDC, and it's just a wrapper. It's just like marketing speak. Because it doesn't mean anything right now. I mean, they're going to come up with some, whatever the technical solution is for what they're looking for, is not going to, it won't matter, you know? Yeah.
The digital dollar, whatever they call it.
They will always be the ones having the button to print more money, create more, and redistribute that wealth. That will be the underpinning of any CBDC they come up with, which is the complete opposite of what Bitcoin is, right? Like nobody controls the money supply. And it's, you know, it's a fair way, and for everybody fair in the same way. To get more, you can start mining. You can expend energy like anybody else and get your Bitcoin by expending that energy. And, or you can buy it from somebody else. But nobody can create more. Nobody can change the protocol.
Nobody.
And that is not what a CBDC is. A CBDC just means that the people in power are going to stay in power. They're going to decide who gets the money, who gets the bailouts, and who won't get the bailouts. And they're just going to keep distorting the economy. So there's, and the dollar is already digital. Come on, you know, everybody in the United States pays digitally. So it's not like all of a sudden we're going to go from analog money to digital money. There's no improvement there as well. So like you said, you know, they just have to react. I don't know.
The difference is that they take the banks out of it. That's all it is. Now you have a direct relationship between central bank and end consumer. But before, it's central bank, commercial bank, end consumer. So who's going to lose in a CBDC? The banks are going to lose big time. So the banks are going to be some of the first big institutions to realize that
Bitcoin. But the banks own the Fed, right? I mean,
yes,
the Fed owned private, by the commercial private, banks.
It is privately owned. This is gonna be interesting. I don't know exactly the whole makeup. I don't know the makeup. Sam Callahan is really good. He works at Swan Bitcoin. He knows a lot more about the intricacies of how the Fed is built up, and the Bank of International Settlements, which is like the central bank. I don't know all that, but I know enough. And what I do foresee, this is what I don't like too, is it's going to go from the dollar how it is to the CBDC. They're going to realize that's broken too, because there's still going to be inflation, or probably even more inflation. And your dollars will probably disappear. They'll probably have like a time limit on how much you can, like, oh, if you don't spend this month, you're going to get UBI for this month. If you don't spend it, then you lose it. If you don't use it, you lose it. And they're going to keep doing that. And then then there's going to be a bunch of inflation. And eventually people are going to go to Bitcoin. And then the governments will go to Bitcoin too, even the big countries. And what they'll say is just how we said that Bitcoin rewrites these history books. They're going to rewrite the history books too. They're going to say, we always believed in Bitcoin. We always knew that Bitcoin was where we were going to go to. We had to make these initial steps to go from the dollar to the CBDC, and now we're using Bitcoin. So as a hodler, as a true Bitcoiner, it's going to be annoying to hear that. Like, it's going to be super annoying because you're like, no, you didn't. You guys are just making this up. You guys did not foresee this. You were doing the exact opposite and wrong thing. But the reason why you Bitcoin is because you can hop out of that matrix, hop out of that fake world. And the reward is you get to hold Bitcoin earlier, and you get there before all the smart people in the world realize it, before all the dumb people in the world realize it, before all the governments realize it. You get there first. So that's the whole point, is you're rewarded with it. But the reward, like volatility, is the price you pay along this reward. So you got to handle the volatility, and you just have to be at that Bitcoin zen. Don't go trading it, trying to think that you're a genius, that you're going to make more. Don't go shorting it. Don't go selling it. Just work your job, save in Bitcoin, and wake up in 10 years from now and watch how much your life has changed.
Nice rant.
Yeah, sorry. I agree. Sorry, I got to stop ranting. It's too many
rants. It was good. That's what we're here for.
Yeah.
It's our show, goddammit. We can rant whatever we want. Yeah. To all the 30 listeners out there.
Yeah. To all the millions of listeners, the millions and millions.
And in front of the millions
of...
It's, you know, like... It kind of feels like, imagine like the government always had television, right? Or let's say like the printing press. And then all of a sudden the internet comes along and they can no longer, I mean, they can still like lay claim or push their monopoly and send their messages out on TV, right? And be like, look, this is our official message. But as everybody gets access to this free and open internet and people can just like search for their own information, you know, it's like slowly but surely that authority and that massive reach and impact they have through like that mainstream media gets diluted. And, you know, people just at a certain point just stop watching the 8 o'clock news, right? So that tool is taken away from them. I think with money, it's going to be the same thing. They're going to hang on to like their... No, we make the money, you know? Yeah, but now there's this free and open Bitcoin out there, yeah, and it actually has better properties than your shitty money. So yes. They're just gonna see the power slip away from them slowly. And you're saying, at one point they'll have to admit it, yeah, but they might put up a fight first as well, you know? Some countries might try to ban it or seize it or forbid you to transacted, and we're going to see some funny things around the world going on. So be careful out there. Keep your keys off the exchanges. And
CBDC is a fight.
What's that?
I think a CBDC is like, that's part of fighting Bitcoin, my mind.
Yeah, but I'm totally not worried about a CBDC. Yeah, if they want to waste their time on like developing and like spending resources on building a CBDC, good luck.
You know, I know, especially a government. Like, what government can get something done in under 10 years? Like, you're going to build something? Yeah. Sorry. Maybe they will.
Yeah. And you know, like to Michael Saylor's point, he made his point like in this podcast earlier, Michael Saylor with... Sven. Oh, that was with the Northman trader.
Yeah.
Sven Henrik. Yeah, Sven Henrik, you're right. And he's like, yeah, you know, what's the market cap of Facebook right now? You know, or what's the market cap of Apple right now? And if I were to give you that amount of money, I don't know what the market cap of Apple is right now, but let's say it's like 500 billion or something. I were to give you $500 billion, could you recreate like an Apple? Like an Apple company with the same network effects and strength and stuff? No. You know, it's like same thing, you know, with the US government. Good luck, you know. You'll need like $1 trillion to build this thing. And then still you won't have the network effect. You'll still lose. So yeah.
The CBDC, is that would you look at it as like Jeff Booth's analogy of adding candy aisles to Netflix?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's just that it's the last grab before it all fails. That's like that's what the CBDC is. No, don't use our dollars. Use our digital dollars.
I've seen it in other businesses as well. I used to work in media and marketing, right? And some clients were really, you know, like forward-looking and proactive and innovative. But you also had like these brick and mortar companies, you know, like there were several of them. There were some were selling like literally like toy stores. Others were like, you had obviously like what did you just mention? The video stores. You remember the good old VHS?
Blockbuster. I think I said Netflix, but I meant to say Blockbuster.
You meant the Blockbuster? Yeah. You know where people used to come to rent their VHS, and then they got competition from Netflix and online streaming. You know, and they see the number of people and rentals declining, so they decided, you know what? If we add like a bunch of food and snacks and candy, then maybe we could recoup some of those. But yeah, then you're just turning your shop into like a candy shop, right? So you might as well.
Yeah, it's a cheap gimmick. It's just a cheap gimmick.
The thing is, yeah, here was this company in the Netherlands. You know, they have all these brick and mortar stores where they sell like fridges, televisions, and that kind of stuff. And I think there were about like three or four bigger chains in the Netherlands that, you know, comprised like 90% of the market share of all those goods being sold in the Netherlands. Until you got like these things like Amazon, but then the Dutch version, you know, like this is one winner here. And there's this bigger mega store, right? But it was especially like the online shopping and online researching, you know, where people would walk into the store and then they would look for it, feel the product, they like it, and then they would go at home and look online to shop for the best deal, right? But all these stores, they had these dinosaur management teams, you know, who just ignored this storm for like the first 10 years. And then when it was too late and they had to face it and recognize the numbers going down, that's when they said, okay, we need a website, you know? And then, but because all these stores were their own stores, they're like, all right, so there's a website, but if somebody wants to order something from, like, I'm just going to say as if it's in the US, like somebody from New York orders, then that sale is actually would have been my store in New York sale. So that person is supposed to get it. So they were trying to fit this online model onto these existing stores, and they
doesn't work.
That's what I imagine the Federal Reserve building a CBDC, you know, like looking like it's they're going to try to fit like this something that doesn't fit, and they're going to lose.
Yeah,
it's just like also in the airline industry, you know, like we have KLM, which is like a royal airline here in the Netherlands. But it, you know, true legacy, they have like these massive buildings, you know, and like these massive fleets and high prices and quality. And then these companies like Ryanair and these online budget airlines they suck, but they were murdering the online game, you know, and
yes,
and these ALM legacy companies, they had like way too much staff and they weren't like flexible or agile to pivot, you know. So yeah, to me that's what's going on here as well. So yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, word to the wise: if you're ever in Europe, don't fly Ryanair, because they or if you do. Oh, yeah. Make sure you figure out how to
EasyJet would have been a better, you know,
make sure you figure out how to check in 2 hours before, because if the app doesn't let you and then you show up and you try to check in, they charge you 75 euros. If you don't check in 2 hours before your flight. That's how they get you.
Do you book like two airline seats, like the seat in front of you, so you got extra leg space?
No. I don't need to do that, but I do like to upgrade to like a business class if I can. or sometimes the person checking me in will just be like, "Whoa, you're tall," and they'll put me in an aisle seat, or they'll put me in an exit row. That's the best.
Like, how tall are you? Are you like twice as tall as a normal average human, or?
No, not that tall. I'm 6'7". So whatever, how tall is a normal guy? Is what, 5'8"? Average guy in the world, maybe 5'8"?
Something. No, I can't do it. I don't know how to do the conversion.
I'm about a foot taller. What's the average height of a guy in centimeters?
Depends what country.
Okay. Well, in the world.
I don't know, dude.
Well, now you got me wondering. So I'm gonna just look it up.
I'm gonna guess it's like 175 or something.
Okay, average height of a man in the world.
No, a little taller, 182.
Okay, average height of a man in the world. Okay, what did you say?
I don't know, 175 to 182, something like that.
Bro, come on. You've lived in Amsterdam for too long, in the Netherlands, because there's tall people out there.
Right.
You're forgetting about like all of the like Asian countries too.
Watch out now.
Well, there's shorter people out there. That's all I'm saying.
True, that's true.
And in Germany, people are taller. And in Amsterdam, in Netherlands, people are taller. But in the Asian
countries, there you go. People are shorter. That's my bias. You're right. That's my bias. So what is it? 170?
Okay. Well, now I gotta do the conversion. So it's 5'7.5". So what's that conversion? Conversion. Hold on. Conversion from centimeters to inches.
It's like the best Bitcoin show ever.
Yeah, because we got to figure this out. Okay, how many inches is 5'7"? Five times 12, 60 plus 7.
60. How many sats per dollar, Sean? While you look that up, I'll look up how much the sats per dollar are.
We're almost at 5,000 sats per dollar.
We really need to go to like a set standard, dude. Like it's like $200. $200 buys you a million sets.
Okay, so that
is what people need to hear.
Yeah, how much?
You get a million.
How far does a million sets? I think a million sets should kind of be the standard that you look at, because that's more digestible. Because sats per dollar, you're like 5,000 sats per dollar. What does that mean? If you're like, I got a million sats and that's costing me about $200, then people are like, okay, that's digestible.
That's easier, right? Than sats per dollar. Because
I agree. I think a million sats should be not necessarily the standard. Obviously, one sat should be the standard, but it's just easier.
$100. $100 buys you half a million sats.
Because who's buying sats at $1? Like, who's buying $1 of sats? Maybe people that are like an hourly yeah.
No, but people also, you got a unit bias, right? People are like, I want to have a Bitcoin. Yeah, but like a Bitcoin is so far out of reach for so many people.
It's kind of reach for some people, though. It got back into reach.
It's very healthy for people to buy $200 worth of Bitcoin. Yeah. If you do that every week or every month, you'll be in a pretty good place in a decade.
Yeah, that's true. So going back to the average height of a man in the world, 67.5 inches, which is 5'7.5", that's 171.5 centimeters.
171. Okay. Yeah, that's pretty.
171 centimeters.
I guess I'm not as tall as you, but
you're probably,
I guess you're over 200 centimeters.
Yeah, I'm like right at 201 centimeters.
Okay. Yeah, I'm 195.
Yeah, you're a tall dude.
Just like my avatar shows.
You're a little kiddo on a DJ. Okay, let's get back into the crazy things that are going on. Should we go into 3AC or into... So let's just do both of those, actually. We'll do them at the same time. You like the organization of this show? BitMEX. So here's something from decrypt.co. No idea who they are. They sound cool. that they sound kind of like altcoin too, whatever. BitMEX and others exiting Three Arrows Capital, that's 3AC, amid 3AC insolvency fears. 3AC is a it's a darling among crypto investment firms for years. So if you don't know what 3AC is, I guess that's what it is. I had never heard of it before.
Compare it to something like, you know, ARK Invest or, you know, like all these funds. And
yeah.
Somebody's managing it and they're usually a guru or some smart traders with a lot of inside connections or some kind of alpha.
Yeah. Probably yeah. Like a Galaxy Digital, maybe something like that with Novogratz. Okay. Here's what they say. We'll read these three paragraphs. So on Tuesday, it emerged that 3AC had begun selling off assets, including $40 million worth of its Lido staked Ethereum, which is STETH, staked Ethereum. It's also widely believed, although still unconfirmed, that 3AC has been trying to keep a $264 million AV loan and $35 million compound loan from going into liquidation. 3AC also had heavy Terra exposure. Ooh, that's a bad thing to have when Terra goes to zero. When Do Kwon or Don't Kwon, according to Corey Clipston, when his Luna Foundation guard LFG, let's freaking get out of here, made another $1.5 billion Bitcoin purchase on May 5th to prop up Terra's stablecoin reserves, it was with the help of 3AC. BitMEX on Friday confirmed that it liquidated Three Arrows Capital, 3AC's position this week. Just yesterday, BitMEX co-founder Benjamin Dilo reached a $10 million settlement with the CFTC, that's the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, to avoid prison time over failure to establish, implement, and maintain AML, anti-money laundering program. So basically, it looks like 3AC, they made a huge, they were exposed to Terra. This is how cascading, if one person goes under, then another person goes under because there is counterparty risk. One person owes money to another, but they go bankrupt. Now I'm expecting money back. Well, now I can't pay my bills because I'm not getting paid what people should be owing me. And that's how things cascade. And who knows who has high exposure to 3AC. So if someone has high exposure to 3AC, then they might get liquidated as well. It's crazy
stuff. Yeah, what's staggering is the numbers, right? We're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars and yes, billions of dollars. You know, Luna was what 1.5, 2.5 billion, or, you know, like it's in like the multiple of billion. So that's thousands of millions of dollars that are being liquidated, evaporated. And just to try and keep it really simple for people, like what's happening here, right?
Yeah.
So Bitcoin is gonna go on a bull run. That creates all this excitement about and draws new investors in.
Yes.
These shitcoin promoters, NFT promoters, new crypto coin X promoters, doggy coin
promoter,
they know these new people are coming in. Right. And they put their marketing teams to work to catch all those people on YouTube and start funneling money into their platforms. Mm-hmm. So these projects start to grow and start to lift. So now these projects, they go to like hedge funds and with their beautiful marketing speakers saying like, look, this thing is going to go to the moon and you guys, we're going to give you a special deal, yada, yada, yada. Everybody's investing like madmen. It's all going great as the bull run is continuing and prices keep going up.
Yep.
And these fake assets, and even Bitcoin like overinflates, right? And then the market sentiment shifts, people get scared, it starts with a small sell-off, then you know, some bigger whales start getting out, and all of a sudden they were like, wait a minute, we might have been too bullish. We thought Bitcoin would have keep going to at least 100K. All these alts are blowing up way too soon. People get nervous. You know, some big billionaire investor says, hey, I want my money out of this investment I did with you.
Yep.
Now they're under collateralized. Mm-hmm. And it becomes this musical chair games of who can get out first before the other. And who has exposure to what, right? And some people think they're safe, but then it turns out that one of their clients was exposed to this, so now they're also exposed to it. And it becomes this domino effect of people going bankrupt, not able to pay back their loans and losing a lot of money.
Yeah.
And that's what we've seen happening. One failure, Luna, led to the next, you know, now A3AC is in trouble. And I think we're going to start seeing that in like Wall Street pretty soon as well, because as the, you know, like the stocks and the equities and everything, and we see the mortgage rate starts going up, once people starting to default on their mortgage payments, you know, we're going to see the same type of stuff go on. And to add on this, just as when Bitcoin is pumping, people are talking about price manipulation and whales are pumping and then dumping. Yeah, there's some of those sharks and really smart guys trying to do that. Also on the way down, Sean. So some of these guys know that, hey, there's a lot of money made to short some of these coins or stocks or whatever. So if they can scare a company, or, you know, that's that they think is, oh, this one is about to crack or might be in trouble, or they can even spread the idea that they might be in trouble, that can cause like a dumping of that coin already. And while they're short, somebody can make a lot of money off of it. So yeah, it's a dog eat dog world out there. And the best thing to do is just not participate in it. Just get your Bitcoin at whatever price you think is good, and stay away from all this, all these big boys fighting each other, pushing the price up, pushing it down. In the long run, it doesn't matter, because in the long run, there's only that 21 million and it's going to adopt to a mass population. But in the short term, don't get caught up in thinking you know what's going to happen, because there's some really, really, I mean, there were even some real rumors going around that like some of these sharks were trying to like get Michael Saylor to some liquidation price, right? Where yes. They try to turn somebody into a forced seller. I mean, yeah, exactly. You never know what kind of information they have, so you can never be sure that it's impossible. But you know, it's important to know that these things do go on the background, and yeah. And yeah. As soon as something gets liquidated, then yeah, things can switch around really fast as well. So it's kind of exciting, to be honest. And there's no point in feeling bad about, oh, I should have sold at 69. Yeah, now that we're here, it's very easy for you to look back and you can say exactly where you should have sold.
Right.
That's not how the price works, obviously. If we all knew that, it's the biggest fool's errand to just worry about that, because in hindsight, everything is 2020, but on any given day, yeah.
We were thinking, oh, stock to flow, plan B, he's still right about his you know, his lower bound model or whatever he called it, and he had hit like every number until November, and that's when we hit 69k, and then like, oh well, then he's got Bitcoin going past 100k in December, and it did the exact opposite. So like, it's hard to just think, oh, I should have sold at 69K. Well, yeah, if we had a DeLorean and a time machine and the almanac, sports almanac, we would all be going back in time and doing that. But all you can do is focus on like, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to stack, I'm going to hold my Bitcoin, I'm going to hold my keys, and I'm not going to get exposed to these companies like a Luna, like this right here with Solana. I don't even know how it's pronounced.
Oh, we haven't even touched on that yet. Yeah, that's crazy.
This is the best one, Solana. So this is from Dylan LeClaire, and it's not just from Dylan LeClaire. There's a lot of people.
Is like a top, it's like a top 10 cryptocurrency, right? Or it was in the top 10, or what is it?
It's somewhere up there. We'll take a look later on.
I'll take a look.
So he says, absolute comedy. Solan protocol, a supposed decentralized lending protocol built on top of Solana, has voted to take over a whale's account with emergency powers to eliminate the chance of forced liquidation. Decentralized in name only. So Solana was getting, Solan was getting in risk of getting liquidated with too much, with a Solana position. So large margin position that is putting Solan protocol and all its users at risk. Here are details about the user at the time of the writing. So it was a whale, had 5.7 million Solana deposited, 108 million USD and USDT borrowed. So just stablecoin dollars. The loan to value was 25%, 95% of Solana deposits, main value, 88%, whatever. This is just a liquidation price, $22. And so what people were scared about was, well, if this whale sells, we all lose, right?
Yeah. It's like, imagine Michael Saylor says, I'm going to sell all my Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Then the Bitcoin protocol says, wait a second, that's very bad for Bitcoin. You know what, Michael Saylor, we're going to freeze your account so you can't sell your Bitcoin anymore. Like, what the hell? You know,
it's like, that's
like a shitty shit.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. And so they granted emergency powers to Solan Labs to temporarily take over the whale's account so the liquidation can be executed over the counter, OTC, and avoid pushing Solana to its limits. This would be done via a smart contract upgrade. But yeah, those are some great things, those smart contracts. Emergency powers will be revoked. Once the whale's account reaches the state level.
Reminds me of Justin Trudeau, you know, like, yeah, we need some emergency powers to,
Yeah.
We just need this exception right now. You know, next time, what's going to be the exception next time?
Exactly.
Whenever you lose or when you're winning or you think you're winning, they just change the rules on you and bye-bye. You never stood a chance.
It's not it. And all these things, they say that they're decentralized because they have a blockchain. Having a blockchain obviously does not make you decentralized. Having a blockchain that have hundreds of thousands of nodes that people run on top of that blockchain that they can vote, where your money can't be frozen, it's uncensorable, censorship resistant, it's unconfiscatable. Money that you decide on and that you hold your keys to, there's only one, and its name is Bitcoin. Bitcoin is king. And the other ones are cheap imitations. That's what all the altcoins are. So don't fall for it. Don't fall for the tricks. Don't fall for the cheap imitations. Buy the real thing. And you don't worry about it. Have peace. Be at peace with your stack. Obviously, you always want more. Do everything you can to get more. But be at peace. Be that Bitcoin Zen with where your stack is now and where it's going. And
look at the numbers, look at the market. I mean, the market has decided, you know, not only like the hashing power is the biggest, the market cap is the biggest. It's going to trend towards like this network effects. So Bitcoin has already won, period.
Yes.
And people are slowly starting to understand that, yeah, of course, everybody wants to make a copy and just create money out of nothing, especially if you can print some for yourself first. And that's what all these new NFTs projects, and yes, your other shitcoin project too, you know, whoever is the founder thought, hey, I can make some internet money too. And if I probably make a buck off of it as well. Why would that project succeed in any way? I'm so tired of it, Sean. It's like been, it's 5 years or maybe not 5 years, but like, at least a good full 3 years of just constantly battling shitcoiners and shitcoin narratives.
Yeah.
I'm starting to reach a point where I just don't care anymore. You know, it's just going to be okay, whatever. If people don't see it yet, just let them get burnt. And
It's not hard to see. But what's hard is that you have this human nature or fiat conditioning that we have, that where we're just running, we just can't stop and calm our emotions. And you don't need to do any drugs. You don't need to go trade something crazy. You don't need to go do anything. Just work, stack Bitcoin, And it's hard for people to be at peace with that. Like you just chill, relax, be at peace with where your stack is, stack hard, but be at peace with where you're stacking. And if you're not at peace with where you're stacking, playing these fiat games is not going to help you out. It's not the answer. And I think a lot of people just have to get burned to figure that out. And maybe they will get burned. There's nothing that we can do besides educate. And that's what we're doing, is trying to educate everyone on the advantages of Bitcoin, the disadvantages of all the altcoins. They're all imitations. They're all here to steal your Bitcoin. So that's all we can do, is educate and talk more. And that's it. That is it for Bitcoiner's Guide, episode 18.
Is it over already?
Already over. These ones happen fast. As a reminder, Kreezes joins the Meme Factory podcast this Thursday at 7:30 p.m. live. That's Eastern time on our YouTube channel.
What's his name again?
Kreezes. Honestly, I don't know how to pronounce his name. I don't know how to pronounce it. I think it's
funny.
Kreezes.
I always say Kreezes.
Kreezes. I'm not sure.
I don't know.
We will find out. We will find, if you want to know how to pronounce his name, we'll find out. Although his articles, he's a smart dude. This is one smart dude, one smart Bitcoiner.
Yeah.
And again,
he makes great animations, explains it in a way that people can really understand it. I love his animations also about how the halving works, you know.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Bitcoin halving, Bitcoin halving party coming 2024. Don't miss that. And remember one more thing: what you see here, what you hear here, when you leave here, don't just let it stay here. Please share, like, and subscribe. We love doing Bitcoiner's Guide. We want to keep doing it.
It's free. Just help us out for free. Just give it a like. It's free. You know, like, we're really happy with it. Leave a little comment. Come on, guys. A little comment, and you know how it works. The algo, man. Yes. We need some more viewers. So.
We don't get paid for this. We are doing this for free. And because we really like Bitcoin, we think it should. We want to give as many people an opportunity to learn about Bitcoin, to understand Bitcoin, but to understand it from a Bitcoiner's point of view, not from the fiat mind. And so that's why we're doing this. So as for Bitcoiner's Guide, episode 18, we're going to keep chugging along. From Plan Marcus and Big Sean, we're over and out. Peace.